What up, guys? Welcome again to another episode of Unplugged. Today, since my other interviews have been very, very serious and some really cool stories, but I thought we'd lighten the mood a little bit, and I bring back Mr. Sean Patrick Gallagher, who has been working out and studying law. He's going to be the best good-looking, muscular lawyer in the world someday. That you're going to be Mr. Universe / attorney at law.
Oh, we were talking about that in private.
No, I noticed. I noticed when we got jump back on, like Sean's shoulders are looking more defined. So I'm proud of you, buddy. I'm really proud of you. Like, anytime you're, don't get choked up. But anytime my friends are doing good and kicking ass, I'm proud of you. You know. But also we got my buddy Christopher Gwendolyn Chan, my twin here, joining us as well for a very
still
special
not my official
episode.
Name. But, yeah, okay, we can go by that if it's.
It's never gonna leave you. But today, I've been watching a lot of Christmas movies. I've been binging like hell because it's the only time of year you get to watch Christmas movies. I love Christmas movies, and one of them is the Santa Claus. And the Santa Claus, you know, it's a contractual, funny movie about Santa Claus with Tim Allen, which I love. I think it's a great movie. But on a rewatch as an older adult, as a cynical adult, you do notice things. And like seeing as though it's a contractual type of plot line with the clause. And I know that Sean is practicing law. And also, Chris, you work at a...
I do not work in a law firm like you always think.
Yeah.
I work as a settlement advisor. And I work with law firms and insurance companies to help people.
So technically this is around the same realm of things you might be knowledgeable about.
And I have to clarify right off the bat, I am not a lawyer. I'm not rendering legal advice. I haven't passed the bar yet. It's very important that if you have gotten into a Santa related contract type dispute or situation, a labor dispute, say with any elves, please contact a qualified Santa focused attorney.
There's probably my disclaimer. Probably a good employment attorney might help you there too.
You're going to need a particular type of lawyer with a particular type of expertise. And yeah. I cannot hold myself out to be that. I have a modicum of contracts law training, and this is general commentary coming from an amateur.
And you haven't studied Elvish law, so I mean that's a whole other bracket you haven't delved into.
Yeah, and to be honest, the mainstream of Elvish law typically focuses on Tolkien and doesn't really get into the issues that are in play in this particular film.
But enough about elves. Before we jump into the Santa Claus, the movie, let me hear what your experiences with Santa, like growing up as a kid, from when you thought what Santa was, and then when you kind of figured out on your own that Santa isn't real. But if you're a kid watching, don't watch this because we're gonna ruin all this for you.
You already did it. I know. You didn't disclaim. You didn't trigger warn.
I did too late. It's okay. They're already stuck. But no. What do you experience as a kid with Santa Claus, and when did you find out that he wasn't real? Like when? How did that perception happen with you?
All right. So there was two instances that caused me to realize that Santa Claus wasn't real. The first one was much sooner, but my mom kind of played it off well enough that I was like, okay, I guess I can still believe in him. And it was like second grade. I came home. We were at Big Bear for a ski trip, and Santa, like Christmas Day, we came home, and I go to my stocking and I'm super excited. And, I reach in and I pull out a grocery plastic bag, and inside is a chewed up, like slightly chewed up Batman action figure. And I guess my mom had asked my nanny to put the action figures on Christmas Eve night in the stockings for us, but my dog had managed to grab the toys ahead of time before, and my nanny didn't know what to do, so she just like threw the packaging away and just put it in a plastic bag and a grocery bag and put it in my stocking that night. And so I was like, wait, what is this? What's going on? And my mom just played it off and said, oh, like Jake must have got it while it was in the stocking. I was like, okay, I guess. And then the second incident was this little thing called Elfie. Have you guys ever heard of this? Are you familiar with Elfie, the story of Elfie?
Like so, Elf on the Shelf? Or who's Elfie?
Yeah, like Elf on the Shelf, or they call it Elfie.
Is that the same guy, or is that the same concept? Was that concept stolen from Elf?
The concept is this: is there's like a little figurine, right?
Yeah.
And it's called Elfie, and like when you first introduce them to your home, as parents, you're supposed to tell your kids like there's a note from the North Pole. This is Elfie here to watch your good deeds for like all of December.
And that's Elf on the Shelf. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, but you're not supposed to touch him, right? Because if you touch him, he'll turn to stone or whatever. When I was a kid, at one point, my mom, so they were moving him around, right? Like the house to make it seem like he's watching us and stuff, which is super creepy, just like in general as kids, you know, like this thing is watching me. But what ended up happening was one time she put it on like a dresser or a cabinet, and we accidentally like knocked that cabinet. And so he fell down and immediately just broke into pieces. Like on the ground, and I was like, "We never touched him. He shouldn't have been stoned." And that's like when I was like, "Okay, yeah, this is all a hoax. Like none of this is real."
So it wasn't like a moment where you saw like Santa on his smoke break or anything. Like you got a sense because of those little things that happened with the elf and your toy. That was like when it didn't feel right to you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it also didn't help that my mom decided to glue Elfie back together and then put him on a different shelf the next day like nothing had happened, you know.
So future note, parents, just replace your elf, I guess, that rather than put it together and save money. But you know, I'm sorry that your nanny messed it up for you. I mean, if anything, your nanny ruined Christmas.
it was my dog.
Sean, what about you, man?
I mean, I was a little turd right from the beginning. I think I was always a skeptic. I don't think I had a specific moment where any of that happened, but I do remember first grade, and I had asked for a black Tyco Tantrum RC car.
Ooh.
I don't know if you guys remember the Tyco Tantrum, but it was a pretty awesome.
Was that the one that would flip?
Yeah, because it had like big rear wheels, and then the front wheels were like a propeller, so that it would, the front wheels would invert, and you could make them spin, and it would you did it, it would like go up in the air. It was a hellacious little RC car, but that was the big thing that year. I think this was the year before Furbies. So like, and I asked for that. And I think I wanted the red one or the black one. One of them was harder to get because they sold out real fast, either the red or the black. And I got the other one, the one I hadn't asked for. And I had multiple issues with this. I thought, okay, obviously, if Santa were, you know, as competent as we're made to believe, he could have gotten the right color.
Oh man!
But honestly, I have doubts from the beginning because, like, I know that these are complicated devices.
Yeah,
you know, you got motors, you got branding. Very very strange to me that Santa could fabricate one of these things. That I know was manufactured in an American factory or Chinese factory or
since
wherever
it was. China.
and just such a perfect replica of the Tyco model that a bunch of, you know, elves with, I don't know, middle ages, like Scandinavian tools could create this. It didn't make any sense to me.
You bring up something I want to mention later, but yeah, like it's funny how I think you're the only person that ever said like to me that said, like they were trying to like not, they're not making these toys. They're making a counterfeit copy of that. Like, so by your theory, you're saying that Santa is the greatest like pirated toy maker in the world.
Oh yeah.
Cause he's not making toys, right?
This isn't one of the legal issues I even anticipated talking about with regards to the Santa Claus, but intellectual property violations. The Santa Claus and its sequels are the bar exam question from hell. I can tell you that.
It probably would be. That'd be so funny to see like it play out in a law school.
It's a spot and analyze.
Well, we're gonna talk about the first movie. But no, Sean does bring up a lot of things that I thought about too. Not as a kid, but like as I was older, about Santa Claus. So you always see like them making like these little cool like toys, but they're like toys from the 18th century. They're like. Are kids still playing with the pony on the stick? You know, like they're doing all these like old toys and like, well, in a modern movie, why aren't these, they should all be like programmers designing apps and designing, you know, like designing games or talking to PewDiePie, like, what should I do? You know, like it, it's, it's funny how like toys have changed, but also the fact that even though toys have changed, elves are still using wooden mallets to make iPads. Like, come on, that fools me now, you know.
All the other stuff really ties together logistically. I have no logistical problems with the Santa story because it all makes perfect sense, except for that part, the wooden mallets.
Reindeer makes sense. Yeah.
The rest of it, mathematically, geographically, no problem.
You know, that's another thing about movies like any Santa Claus movie or any movie with magic. It's just convenient for the plot. There's no rule. You just manifest things and ignore things. Magic. But you know, for me growing up, because my parents were from Thailand, there's no Santa Claus. There's no Christmas. No one celebrates Christmas in Thailand because they're mostly Buddhist. So the whole idea of Santa was very foreign to my parents. So when they came to America, they wanted to have like, you know, American traditions and get gifts for the kids. But I went to American school, so I knew what Santa was. So like, oh, this guy comes and gives me presents on Christmas. That's awesome. You know, like everybody watches cartoons and we know the story, the sleigh, all that stuff. But when it came time for Christmas, like my parents got me gifts, right? And then like I was like, did Santa bring me this? They're like, no, we bought it. Like my parents wouldn't give him credit. They would never give Santa credit because like, no, I bought you these presents with my hard work. This is what I bought you. It wasn't Santa. So then it's like, well then why did Santa skip me? Did Santa like, did my parents say like, oh no, it's cool, we got it? Like why didn't Santa give me a gift? And it was never, I never got a gift from Santa. So that was like my thing where like, okay, I don't think Santa, I now get it. Like Santa is just this thing that parents tell kids just to be nice. And I would never be the kid like Santa's not real. I would just like, you know, I would just embrace the magic and just, you know, keep it going.
For you didn't think Santa was just like a bigot and he just like only went to WASP camp?
Yeah, maybe. He went to kids' families with maids apparently. But yeah, that's how I interpreted Santa, and I love the idea of Santa. I love the idea of keeping kids' innocence and you know, giving them imagination. You know, so I'm always on board for fooling a kid or keeping that, you know, that magic alive in a child's mind. But at some point, like, you know, you can't, the kid, I feel like the kid finds out on their own. You know, like there's not like a shocking moment where it like crushes them, but eventually they find out, and when they find out, it's like, okay, you know. I wouldn't say I'm traumatized by it. I don't think you guys would say you're traumatized by it, right?
No,
because I never really believed it.
Yeah.
I know who people like some kid told them at school and they were crushed by it. And they like cried to their parents later, like, why did you do this to me?
Yeah.
not me.
Sean's like, next time I want the red one. That's what he was like.
Just saying, he's that's a whole lot of magic to not be able to get the color right.
There are a lot of discrepancies in terms of like the mythology of Santa Claus. But
also, I was in an apartment. Where's the chimney?
But they explained that in the movie in Santa Claus. They explained that in a weird way.
Well, I hadn't seen that movie yet, so.
A few years ahead of me.
I truly don't know whether if I ever have kids, I don't know if I want to lie to them about Santa, like teach, like pretend like Santa Claus is real and give them that joy and then only to see it crushed later on, or if I'm just going to be like honest and be like nope, like your parents' guitar. These are for me. my hard-earned paycheck paying for your toys. I'm Santa Claus. You leave out cookies for me.
Those cookies? I ate them. Crushed. Santa Claus still is a fairly new, I mean, the idea of Santa Claus that we have didn't really happen until like the early 20th century, you know, and then it's not like it, Santa fell into the tradition of most, the American steam engine of the Christmas holiday, where it became this bigger thing than just, you know, celebrating the birth of Christ. It's about, you know, shopping and Christmas trees. And, you know, if I remember right, there was like a Rockwell painting of like a Christmas dinner. And that became like the cornerstone of every ideal American's Christmas. And it kind of built from that.
Yeah. And Coca-Cola put them in red. Yeah. It was like the red thing wasn't a thing until Coke made it.
Yeah, yeah. Branding creates holidays. That's really what happens.
to paraphrase Don Draper, Santa was invented by guys like me to sell toys.
Okay. Off the bat, the Santa Claus, when the movie opens. So I wrote some notes about the movie. There's some things that kind of caught my eye in terms of like kind of weird. Off the bat, Tim Allen's character, Calvin, is, you know, the workaholic dad, you know, and he doesn't have time for his one kid, and he's divorced. His ex-wife has a new husband, and it's a very common trope in holiday movies, like dad's working too much, you know, and trying to do everything for his kid. It must be very relatable for a lot of working parents out there and divorced kids and whatnot. We're gonna go with the story and then I'll kind of give you my theories afterwards and stuff. But you know, it starts with him finding, you know, going to Charlie, having Charlie for Christmas Eve. You know, Charlie doesn't like being with his dad. Sure, a lot of kids can relate with that when they haven't seen their dad for a long time. They go to Denny's for dinner, and I think it's so funny that Denny's would approve this, like, this cameo because
this negative light.
Yeah. you think they would like they have a problem with like them going to Denny's? Like, do you have this? No. it's a depressing Denny's.
Just like a Danny's or something.
Yeah.
Just to skirt the issue.
Yeah, there wasn't a special Santa Claus menu for that went in the movie. But it's just funny because, like, it's – but to be honest, it's a pretty true portrayal of Denny's late at night.
Hey, some of those cast parties were great. Once a year in the spring, a middle school takes over at Denny's, and there is happiness late at night at the Denny's. It happens.
Magic happens.
Maybe twice a year.
Honestly, watching the movie again, I would say it's probably the first law he broke, which is a law now, is bad driving, negligent driving, right? When he was rushing home. And then also, what's the other law he broke? Was he talking on the phone like this? Because that's a
he was driving on the phone, driving, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, which is now like frowned upon and illegal. You're like, you had a phone in your car, you got to use it. That's how it was. Oh man, you know what's funny? I forgot how silly a car phone is. My dad had one, and then like he realized he had to pay for the service. He's like, I'm not paying for it. So he never used it. But he got the phone, but he never used the cellular service. I'm like,
oh yeah, there used to be the luxury cars would have a phone built in, a big brick built into the console.
Everybody thought those were the coolest things ever.
I wonder what the reception was like on those things. Probably horrible, and you probably can't even put it on your speaker. You know, there was no Bluetooth. Sign of the times, man. I put down. Oh, so when they get back home and you know the roof was such a clatter, you know, Santa falls, and like throughout the entire movie, Calvin has zero remorse. There's never a sense of like we better call the cops or I need to call an ambulance or like. And even after he's dead, like he's trying to dispute it, and like I have a lawyer and stuff, and like, what should you do when you witness not murder but like a death? Like, let's just say your mailman drops right in front of you. Like, what are your first actions?
From a legal standpoint,
from legal and also like personal, like you would be like, dude, are you okay? Check his pulse. Call 911. You know, like there are normal things a person would do when someone dies. Right.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think if there's a legal response.
There actually is not a legal duty to render care if you didn't cause the injury. But if you did cause the injury, then there is.
It's his property, though.
But yeah, it is his property, and that guy fell on his property. Although that could also be trespassing on Santa's part. So.
Yeah. Exactly. See, Santa's the basic concept of Santa is a lot of illegal stuff to begin with. So. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that.
I mean, okay, from a moral standpoint, yeah, he should have obviously called like immediately. Like that's probably the first thing I would have done is like a guy dressed in a Santa suit just fell off my roof. Okay, I'm gonna call the cops. Like that's the first thing I'm gonna do. Instead of like search his body for he's like looking for
Well, he's checking his ID, which I think, like, I guess you, I would, right? Right? Like, you, or do you just wait till the cops come? I don't know. Like,
I mean, that sequence is only a couple minutes, right? It's not like he's, taking that long. And then he disappears. So yeah. I don't know. Now, I don't know if he takes too long. I don't know if a wrongful death action would hold up in court against him. I don't think he's liable.
I'm trying to think of like what I would do, and like someone like just dropped dead in front of me. I call the police. Actually, I probably wouldn't even go through the guy's pockets and let someone else do that, or wait till like the cops come, or wait till like somebody comes to do that and identify. Unless like I'm on the phone and the ambulance person's like, hey, look at their wallet, then they'll be okay, I'll do it, you know. But I probably wouldn't touch the body. I personally, I don't like touching dead people. That's a thing. But second question.
I don't
question,
either, usually.
Right? Second Not question. Now, is it legally binding to have a contract or a clause that states that if I were to put on this coat, I hereby have, you know, like if I drop dead and my coat said, my jacket said, if you wear this jacket, you're liable for my mortgage. You know, like, is that legal?
I don't think there's a single contract that works that way. Like, an action is like your signature. Like, you put on this jacket and you've signed this contract. No.
Gotcha. It's like that. It's like that. That PC versus Mac commercials. Remember those commercials? I'm a Mac. I'm a PC. Where the PC's like he's like losing a bunch of money, and so he's a bake sale, and he's like he's got muffins. And the Mac is like, oh, they had the muffins. How much they cost? And he's like, just try it. He's like, all right, but he's like, no, just try it. And he buys it, and he's like, $1 million. Yeah, you have to pay me because you took a bite. So, I don't want to get too nerdy here, but we're lacking a couple of the fundamental elements of contract formation. One of them is intent to enter into a contract.
So, like, imagine if he took this up to a court, like, look, all I did was put the jacket on, and, like, there's a con – like, that's – this doesn't work. Come on. Like he would win that, right? That's something
you got to be aware of the fine print. You're not off the hook for anything that's in fine print, but you got to be aware of it because you have to manifest your assent, and you have to understand that you're entering into a bargain. So, like, there are, like, three basic elements to contracts. You have to have offer, acceptance, and consideration. Now, the offer would be there, but
it was never presented to him.
The acceptance has to be like what the reasonable person would understand themselves to be accepting. And so if the fine print is hidden away somewhere or it's not apparent, then it's not gonna hold up. And there's no consideration. It has to be an exchange of something. Like you have to give up something or promise to do something. On both sides, it can't be unilateral. So, as far as I can tell, he doesn't really get anything out of the deal. It's just an obligation. Like when there's nothing on the card that's like, here's what you get out of it.
I mean, so we're lacking on
most of the key points here.
So, if I were to magically kill a Santa and put on his clothes, I'm not liable, is what you're telling me.
Depends how big was the fine print. What were you offered?
So it's still a blurred line there. Okay. Well, anyways, he puts his jacket on and then he, you know, continues to break in. Now, a break-in is still a break-in, whether or not you steal something or leave something, correct?
Yeah. Well, you're breaking and entering.
If you do it with the intent to
commit a felony inside, then it's a burglary. But it's a break. But it's a breaking and entering either way.
Okay, but there's no type of name for breaking in and giving gifts, right? Are there? Has that happened? I mean,
breaking and giving.
Yeah, breaking and giving. Yeah, because although someone broke in, it's like somebody broke in my house, but they gave me a 12-inch. I mean, 12-inch. They gave me a 60-inch TV, you know, like then are you going to be like, I'm reporting it or like, I'm going to, that's okay with me.
Well, I think there's an important thing here, which is if you can make an argument that there was consent, then there's no breaking and entering to begin with. So if they left milk and cookies, what are the odds you leave milk and cookies on December 24th at night by the tree, and you didn't understand that that was consent for the whole thing to happen. Like, sounds to me like Santa's got a pretty— I'm sketched out by most of the breaking and entering part, but if they're milking cookies there, I think you can't hold him criminally liable.
I want to see Santa on SVU. Like, look, they gave me cookies and milk. Yo, they were asking for it, man. They wanted my gifts. I think we're walking a very thin line here, but you bring up a good point. So I guess the action of leaving milk and cookies, you're just inviting Santa to—
if you understand him to understand that to be an invitation, then, you know, I think we're good.
here's what I want to get into. Santa died, right? Before Scott Calvin took over. So that's like an employment death? Like, cause, you know, wrongful death at work? Or is it a different type of death cause it's like on someone's property? And regardless—
sure. So my impression is that the elves are unionized, but I don't know if Santa's in the union or if he's like an exec who's outside of the union.
Outside of the union? Yeah.
I don't know if they clarify that in the movie.
I'd say it's still a work comp claim for his death, but here's the thing. He just disappears. Scott Calvin just automatically become the beneficiary of his estate? Like, is that how that all worked?
And I think he's what we call the successor in interest. Yeah.
Okay.
That's but a real thing.
what happened to, so Scott Calvin has to get rid of his old identity and stuff and his old family, right? Like, does nobody bother to tell the other guys, like the other Santa Claus's family, like that he ended up dying? If that guy had a family, do you know what I mean?
Like, I'm down. I want to see the prequel. I want to see about what happened to the Santa before, because I have my theories about the Santa that was killed off. But we'll get to that at the end of the video. But let's fast forward to he goes to the North Pole. He lands, and you just see a bunch of busy elves. Do elves— they never stop? They never stop working? They're building toys 24/7. I mean, I imagine you have to work to supply toys for the entire world of kids, not counting kids who don't celebrate Christmas. I imagine they would skip those houses. I don't know. But would you have to work every second, every day to?
Well, apparently they only need to be supervised from Thanksgiving on, right? Wasn't that the rule in the movie? Was it Santa had to come back by Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
He had to come back, but I think
so they still got their foreman.
Well, Bernard was the guy who supervised everybody, apparently.
No, you mean Numbers. Okay. His name's Numbers. He was on Numbers. I call him Numbers.
Speaking of SNL elves, you guys see the Alec Baldwin one?
Oh,
he's Glengarry Glenn Ross.
Oh, yeah. That one. That was a good elf.
Comes in, he goes, yeah. You call yourself a cobbler? Always be cobbling. A, B, C, always be cobbling.
But he messed it up because he said closing at first.
He said closing, yeah.
Cobbling. Always be cobbling. That was a great skit. I love that one. So from an employment standpoint, if they have no breaks, that's like completely illegal, at least in the United States and in California.
Well, that's why you ship your jobs overseas, or even better, you put them on the North Pole. There's no jurisdiction in the North Pole. No.
There's not. You're right. So Santa wouldn't have to deal with, maritime law because it's no one's up there. Like,
Saint Nicholas was from Eastern Europe. All right. And he figured this out pretty early on. He's not putting his factory in Minsk.
What are these elves getting out of it anyways? Like, do they— the joy of the kids of the United States or of the world?
We got a whole other legal issue there. Like, what are we dealing with here? Is this indentured servitude?
Yeah, that's what it seems like.
You know, I would love to see a movie about elves, but in the workplace, where like you kind of see why they're, you know, like imagine The Office, but like with elves, you know, like the logic of they know, no one's ever explored that, you know, because it's always like they just work, they just love working, but no, come on. I imagine somebody wants a break and have a beer or peppermint schnapps. I don't know. So in the movie, he lands and then he meets all the elves. And then, you know, from there on, they just completely ignore that they lost their former boss. You know, and it's right back in the business.
They don't even care.
Not a care.
Like, how would the old...
But there should be like, if like, let's say any job you get a new manager, you have to explain and show them all the work stuff, or, you know, and like, what does Santa do besides just deliver if he's just that replaceable?
Well, he does the list, right? He checks on who's naughty and who's nice. He's got the magical powers of knowing who's naughty or nice. So
there is that.
That's a very dangerous power.
That is, yeah, it is also a very crucial power. So
he's the ultimate arbiter. I mean, I don't know a single kid who's not both of those things all the time. And here he is sitting in judgment, you know.
from his high chair. His high horse. It's actually quite daunting to be like, what, this old guy is the one guy who's gonna be telling me whether my kid's naughty or nice? Like, come on.
He's an intro into Saint Peter,
I guess. Another thing that bugged me was he makes a pass at an elf. Like the Judy?
He makes a pass at her. He doesn't.
He says, you know, you look pretty good for your age. And then she says, like, oh, I'm seeing someone in accounting or something. And like, that was awkward to me just to see that scene.
I don't know. By the lights of 2020, I'm going to say that was workplace harassment, probably hostile work environment.
We did a survey for work, and that was actually on there.
We did our mandatory sexual harassment training.
It's on my head. Advanced sexual harassment.
Yeah. Finish your sexual harassment training, guys, if you haven't done it yet.
That would also be an employment law case.
That would.
It would be, but it's also that's a you know, Civil Rights Act Title VII case.
Okay.
So that's a federal thing, except that they're in the North Pole. So.
Now,
no, Civil Rights Act was not passed as far as we know.
Also, we might have. I mean, I should say that the elves they weren't very diverse elves. There are a lot of really fair skinned elves in the North Pole. So that, yeah. But I don't know.
I don't think you can blame them for that though. I mean, there's very little sunlight.
That's true.
And, they've been up there for you know, hundreds of year generations. I don't think that they've had like a strong affirmative action program for circulating elves around the globe as far as I'm aware.
So I just want to clarify that we're overthinking just for fun. Like, we're not this obsessive about the Santa Claus, but this is just a fun thing that we're doing.
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm filing a certiorari petition right now to take this all the way to the Supreme Court. We need someone to vindicate these elf rights, all right? SPEW.
No one's fighting for elf rights, man. Elf rights count. Elf lives matter.
ELM. ELM. ELM.
I'm just fusing franchises right now. You guys know SPEW. Or SPEW.
SPW?
The Society for the Protection of Elvish Welfare.
What's that from?
I did not know that. I think he just made that up.
Oh, did you? That's great. Wow, that's a good one.
No.
Is that from
Potter?
Oh, it's Harry... Oh, shoot.
They got the elves slaving away in Harry Potter.
Oh, my
too.
God. Oh, you're right. You know,
Hermione takes up her little, her social justice warrior cause, and everyone just laughs at her the whole time and calls it Spew. And she's a hero, you know?
Oh, my God. I totally forgot about that. You just, oh, my. You know, I've watched a few fantasy movies, clearly. But you know, I find my fantasy movies, they're very racist. Like when they describe, like, oh, elves, they just are holy and moly. Oh, dwarves, they're dirt diggers. Like they're every one of these fantasy movies are very racist. I watched the Artemis Fowl movie, and like the whole thing with Artemis Fowl is, like, oh, he's supposed to know all about these fantasy characters because his dad is like a cryptologist or whatever. And then they're studying, right? What did I tell you about dwarves? They only like gold, and they don't talk to anybody. And I was like, it's kind of racist. Like that, he's like making.
Oh yeah, the Harry Potter goblins are anti-Semitic as hell. But you know,
man, that's it's so weird to see that now as an adult. but it's yeah. Hey guys, let's make our fantasy characters a little less prejudiced, all right? But the elves, you know, they run the plants. So they're working nonstop. Santa goes away. He has to come back after Thanksgiving, because that's when I guess Santa goes into Santa boot camp. I don't know. But for Calvin, he comes back. His son Charlie is talking about these stories of Santa Claus and the North Pole, so it concerns his parents. And like, my thing is, why Charlie's what, maybe 5 or 6? He's a little kid. This is like the prime age for kids to have an imagination and to just believe in Santa Claus. But his mother and his stepdad, played by the great Judge Reinhold, they want so badly to like ruin his imagination. Like I've never seen parents be so vindictively being like, well, no, I don't know. Parenting styles, I feel like that age, a kid should just believe what they want to believe, unless, it's Christmas. What's so bad about Santa Claus?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why they're psychoanalyzing him so hard.
Yeah, right? Like, and it's Neil's kind of like, dude, calm down on the, because I've talked to many of my psychologist friends, and like they don't like diagnosing their kids because they feel like it's unfair, and I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just Neil. I think that's Neil's character is kind of like he's like every father's worst nightmare of like the guy that your wife would marry. In sense of like, this guy's annoying, he's just like super sensitive, wearing Cosby sweaters, and analyzing everything, mostly offended by the Cosby sweaters, but everything else I could do without too.
You're talking about Weenie Whistle Man, right?
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah.
What's a Weenie Whistle? Yeah.
He's the 80s equivalent to Jason Segel. I thought it was really odd that they were so content on telling Charlie, that Santa's not real. But yeah, it was weird to me. Once Scott starts, gaining weight, I noticed when Scott started gaining weight that not only did he, his physical appearance, but his mental appearance, mental state would change. He cared more about kids. He cared more about, the image of Santa, even though he was just trying to be like, no, I'm not doing this. When he gained weight, it kicked in where like he subconsciously started becoming Santa. And when he was at work, he finally went to work all disheveled in a Santa fat, and they fat shame him. They kind of fat shame him in the office. And I think that would
be something. And he'd been fat shaming, earlier in the movie. So it's a little bit of comeuppance for him.
Yeah, yeah.
Full circle. He picks up pants and he's like, oh, he's huge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there? I think fat shaming now is something that is something that's brought up with HR, correct?
Yeah. I mean, that all falls under employment cases as well. That'd be discriminatory practices. If he was terminated, he could file a wrongful termination suit against the toy company that he was working for. But we don't know if he's terminated, right? I mean, the guy just pulls him aside and is like, get your shit together, basically. And then like sends him home or whatever. But. So we don't really know. Maybe he quit. Maybe, but yeah, totally could have filed a suit there.
There's something weird about the Santa Claus itself, like the clause itself. That not only does contractually you have to be Santa Claus, but it physically changes you, not only but physically and mentally, because that's when he started becoming more Santa like. So it definitely affects his mental health. And it affects his body, but he still has his metabolism and his heart. He's healthy. He looks jolly and fat. So it's like,
well, he does get an irregular heartbeat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun, dun. That's funny.
And I have to give credit to the movie for just coming with clever ideas like that. It's a fun movie. Like I want to be very clear, I enjoy the movie. It's just funny to kind of.
It's one of my favorite. It was one of my favorite Christmas kids movies.
Yeah,
my favorite line that I appreciate now. Not so much as a kid, but I think is "Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good night. tomorrow morning when I wake up, I'm getting a CAT scan.
Yeah. That's a great line for that movie. Another one I like is when he starts looking at the kids like, Johnny, nice. Jimmy, naughty. You know, and then he sees like a woman walking by and he's like, Charisse, nice.
Yeah, and then she's like, in your dreams, fat boy, or whatever.
Yeah. So it has like a lot of great elements in it. But with those Santa, I guess, powers, like, because he's eating nothing but sweets and
sugar,
milk. he has super diabetic powers, you know. I don't think that's a good image to share with the more health conscious world. I also found something really weird that like the elves can get things FedExed to anywhere. Or FedEx actually picks up parcel from the North Pole, or someone from the North Pole delivers down to the nearest FedEx building, but they can deliver to FedEx. And also, I might add, in very immaculate cases that aren't binged or damaged from all my other FedEx orders. So, like, for Santa Claus, they really go extra mile and give them really pristine boxes. But yeah, mailing from the North Pole to, where is he? Cleveland? He's in
Chicago.
Chicago? Yeah, Chicago. Like, what? God, how much would that cost? Because that's like a very special. If they're using FedEx, they're paying for it, right? Or it's just
okay. It would be in the thousands and thousands of dollars. I mean, you saw the list, right? The boxes and crates that was sent to him, and how
Santa's saving that on labor, you know.
Oh, so, yeah, that's true.
You're right. Also, for all the children of the world, it only took four FedEx vans. So it's like, wow, that's like I don't feel like that's a lot of four. Because we've all seen a storage van, you know, and how much it fits, and four vans full of lists of kids, that's not that much.
Well, it was hey, 11. It was 11.5 font. That's why.
Also, I have to give the elves credit for making the list. Not only like making it a like really they printed it out. They just killed all that paper. But also, like, it's like either it was handwritten or they have like a really great font on their printer, because they're all like super nice. But he's just gonna check it, right? That's all he's gonna do. Does it have to be made like it looks like a Hallmark card? But like, why go with the purpose?
I don't know. But I will say, the North Pole has a Canadian postal code.
They do.
This is something that I learned in research for this. The Canadians gave them a postal code. It's H0H0H0.
So where's what is that?
Ho ho ho!
I mean, it's a joke by the Canadians, but it's not my joke.
Yeah, no, that's really clever. But here's the thing: kids do send letters to Santa. Like, letters to Santa are a real thing. That I know the parcel service takes it very serious. They store them all out, and I they do pass them out to people to. I guess to fulfill those wishes upon their, you know, if they like volunteering, you know, like. If
wait, this really happens in the United States?
Yeah. Kids.
If I wrote a letter to Santa Claus, the U.S. Post Office would divvy it out to somebody to fulfill my Christmas wish if they wanted.
Yeah. You want a free PS5? Good luck. Yeah, but people do that. They've been doing it for years. I think it's a long time tradition for the Postal Service to do that. I mean, they don't answer all of them, you know, but like they do keep these letters to pass off for charities. So it does happen. So it's funny that they have a post. So that means like if I Googled North Pole postal zip code, like it'll have ho-ho-ho. Like I could technically mail a letter to Santa. Whether or not he gets it, you could do that. So.
Oh man, this is crazy.
Yeah, that's cool though. That's as a lover of puns, I love you, Canada. Thank you. there's a weird feeling I get about Neil, the stepfather, like
Weenie Whistle.
Yeah, Weenie Whistle guy. He's always trying to undermine Calvin, and like it's almost as if he's trying to steal Calvin's family. You like it's a little too. Because there, when Calvin, when Charlie takes his dad's for career day, like he looks upset, and he looks upset that Charlie chose his Calvin to speak it as Santa. You know, like he was genuinely upset. You know, so like Neil kind of bothers me in this movie because he's just so, I don't know. He's like
creepy stepdad.
Yeah. Like if anything, he looks like he's gonna kill Calvin, or he's been trying to get rid of Calvin for years, and now this is his chance. You know,
isn't he the better dad though? Isn't that what we understand at the beginning of the film before Calvin has his revelation that mom and stepdad are doing a better job and they're more responsible and all that stuff. And as far as they know, stepdad's doing some crazy stuff to try to impress the kid, you know?
Yeah. He's like the super sensitive dad. Yeah. I think that's the parody that he's doing, you know? But I mean, at the end, for me, the moral is, well, you know, we'll get to the moral once we get to the end, actually. Let's kind of get back into the story, as it were. Oh, but once Tim Allen goes back to the North Pole, like all of a sudden the elves are making new technology for him. This is like anti-burn clothes. Like where was this technology for the other Santa? You know, like why
burns? They didn't care about that Santa.
Yeah. Like what makes Calvin so special?
They can prevent him from falling off a roof.
Dude.
Like that wasn't a foreseeable hazard. At the
top. for 100 years, no one's ever thought Santa could fall off a roof. But
no
the
one ever
thing...
saw him and went, "Hey, it's Santa."
honestly, there should also what they never explore is within that elf world, like in the North Pole, if they have like all these different departments for toys, like safety protection, like all this different stuff, they obviously should have a claims department, right? I mean, like an insurance company that insures all of the people within the North Pole. So if anything happens to the elves, if anything happens to Santa, it's like someone's held financially responsible. It's the claims office.
Also, for homeowners insurance, are you insured for break-ins? Or I mean, depending on the contract, right? You can be insured for a break-in, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
But there's no insurance coverage for breaking in and giving. You know what I mean? Like I'd like to make a claim. It's like for what? Someone broke into my house. Okay. Like what damage was sustained or what property was stolen? It's like I actually got a 60-inch TV now. So I'd like another $1,000 on top of that for the breaking.
I'd like to give that back.
I'm deeply traumatized by my kids being happy with all their gifts, you know? So basically the thing that's weird to me is that like with Calvin, he gets more technology. One thing I think was cool is that like, I think every car needs a cookie dispenser in their car. I truly wish that's a real thing. I want that in my car.
How many cookies you got rotating through that thing, you know, and how often are you replacing them? What's your rotation? You know, that's just a concern, you know, because ants.
Also hot liquid.
I got a legal question for Sean, since you're in law school right now. At the end of the movie, he kind of kidnaps his son. Kind of. Like,
no, he kidnaps.
His son wants to go with him and he takes him to the North Pole. And then the parents call the cop, the step parents call the cops on him and say like he kidnapped his own kid. But can you kidnap your own kid? Who had custody? I think it was joint custody. So,
well, because they got custody, right? Like that was part of the.
Oh, they turned custody over.
They had a hearing during all this stuff, and they got, you know, mom got custody.
That's right. Now I remember.
And then towards the end, they end up like forgiving that and everything. But yeah, no, when he if he takes him and he doesn't have custody, he's totally
breaking the law.
Yeah, completely. That's
like the classic. That's the classic way that people get kidnapped is by their
custodial
parents.
It's very common, and that's why like it happens when it happens. It's taken so seriously because like you know no one, and especially if you really think logically, imagine like my husband took my kid and he's dressed like Santa Claus. I don't know where they are. That's a lot of craziness right there. You know, but honestly, if you were to steal a kid on Christmas dressed as Santa Claus, that might be your best like costume on Christmas Eve, you know?
Mm.
I'm not saying do it. Nobody steal their kids.
Right. not saying this terrible thing to do is good, but that's exactly how you want to do it. We'll add some extra tips in the description. But don't do it.
Yeah. Now when Calvin's caught.
But we linked to a really good outfit on Amazon that you can get if you're into that kind of thing.
Cheap. Very cheap. Under $100.
All these divorced dads, like, I got a plan now.
What's the show called again?
Unplugged.
Unplugged? Promo code unplugged22 or something.
See, now we're getting into really like crossover territory between the Santa Claus and Mrs. Doubtfire.
We are very similar. Like oh, you know what's funny? Robin Williams was up for this part. He was up for
was
the
he?
Santa Claus. Yeah, I would love to see him as a Santa Claus. To me, Robin Williams is like my ideal like movie dad. You know, because like
so wouldn't it be like the second time in 2 years that he's like the disgruntled non-custodial dad that has to dress up.
But speaking about special effects and also making things bigger, I think the makeup effects in the Santa Claus are great. I think they're so great to this day.
Yeah, for a 90s movie, for sure.
Well, even for like a movie now, like the fat suit when he touches his belly, it's done really well. Like just the morphing effects and the CGI. It's very questionable now, but like the effect, the makeup, great job. It holds up.
I never saw the sequels, but I know that they did a lot more technology with like CGI in the new movies, especially like the reindeer and stuff. And I just didn't think it was like I never saw it, but I saw a couple clips of it on TV and stuff, and I just didn't think, you know, it looked as good.
You know, the other movies, they're not, you don't need to watch them. It's not like a trilogy where you need to know the story. The first Santa Claus is just a good movie. Yeah. Leave it there, you know. Sequels are—they're just continuing the story, but they're not great. Yeah. But when you know Tim Allen as the Santa Claus was a lot of debate because people were like Tim Allen the Tim the Toolman Taylor, you know, like he was known for Home Improvement. Buzz Lightyear, yeah. But Santa Claus, you think more like maybe British or really like something. An actor that could give a little bit more prestige to the character. You don't think, no one thinks Tim Allen. So his transformation was great. Kurt Russell's up for the part too. And he's playing him right now in the what's that? Christmas. It's called Christmas. It's on Netflix. It's on Netflix. A movie.
Wait, Kurt Russell's up for a part of Santa?
Well, he was up for the, he was up for Santa Claus.
He was like the drunken, like,
it's that new movie on Netflix.
I haven't seen it.
He's playing Santa right now on Netflix, and it's from
a year or two ago. I mean, it's from a couple of years ago.
Oh, man, no wonder he put on so much weight. I saw some pictures of him in recently, and I was like, "Dang, he really let himself go." I guess it was all for a role.
Yeah. Also, Harrison Ford was up for the role. Harrison Ford. I would love to see Harrison Ford as Santa Claus or as the Santa Claus, because like he has like this careless swagger that I think would have worked for the character.
Time out. Who are we talking about? Did you say Russell Crowe or Kurt Russell?
Kurt Russell.
Okay, I'm sorry. I mixed up my two actors just now because I literally was thinking Gladiator, Santa Claus. Like sorry.
I've been down for an action Santa Claus movie. Have you guys seen Rise of the Guardians where Alec Baldwin voices, I guess, a Russian-type Santa Claus?
Nope.
It's worth the watch. It's because it's like the Avengers of
fantasy
stories.
Is the Easter Bunny in it?
Yeah, Tooth Fairy, oh, Easter God. Bunny, and like Jack Frost, the Sandman, and Santa Claus.
Jack Frost is my favorite legend, man. I love Jack Frost.
I don't know much about Jack Frost. I just know the He's the embodiment of winter, right? Is that what Jack Frost is?
Yeah, I guess. The next Unplugged episode, we can talk about Jack
Frost. Yeah, we'll do a Christmas trilogy. No, Santa Claus is arrested for breaking and giving.
Yeah. I think it's more about the child abduction.
I forgot. He abducted his kid. Charlie is nowhere to be found. They sent in these like elf commandos to save the day.
Tinsel. Not just but, for decoration.
Yeah, yeah. And where were they when their last Santa died? Like, oh, you're willing to come like break him out of jail, which is a crime, right? If you break someone out of jail, that is a crime, an accessory or whatever.
Oh yeah. So I know that's a crime in and of itself. Yeah.
Also, it's attacking a police officer. That is
a jailbreak is a lot of different crimes. Yeah.
there's a loophole around that.
For all we know, North Pole is a non-extradition. So
that's true. That's true.
As long as they get back across the border, we're good.
But yeah, so then after that,
was it really assault on an officer though? I mean, they never touched him.
They spun him around really fast.
Assault doesn't require touching.
No? Okay.
No,
all right.
That's battery. Right.
Lawyered. That's battery. Lawyered. I was lawyered just now.
Assault is the indication that causes in the victim a readily, what's the wording? Apprehension of imminent unwanted touching. So if I do this and I stop at your face, that's assault. And then if I hit you, that's battery. That's what assault and battery go hand in hand.
Got it.
Oh, okay. So technically, if you do the whole like I'm not touching you, that is
still assaulting.
But it's not battery.
If they reasonably think that you're going to touch them,
okay,
then that's assault.
Oh, that's a very thin line.
Yeah.
So would you consider wrapping a police officer in ribbon in a comedic way? Assault?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, if the cop doesn't want it, as long as the person doesn't want it, it's
consent. Yeah,
that's a better. Yeah.
Okay. Well, he gets out of jail. He broke the law again, and he takes. I mean, Charlie back to his mom and stepfather, and this is where the moral of the story comes. You know, and I guess you said earlier that the moral was that he understood that. He was an unfit, not unfit father, but he couldn't be the right parent that Charlie needed to have a normal life. So he leaves Charlie with his mom and his stepfather, and he comes to a common ground with Neil. You know, I think this part of the movie relates for a lot of kids who have a father who has a job traveling overseas or it works in a very prolific job that takes a lot of their time. You know. So I think what I saw as the moral is like for kids to understand that family, you know, family's family. It doesn't mean that you have to be together all the time. You still have your family, you know, just because your dad's working overseas doesn't mean he doesn't love you any less. He's still your father, but you know, families change. You know, you have your mother and you have your stepfather. That was my kind of, I think that's where this movie became something that would, that kids from divorced families react to, kids with working parents would react to. So I guess for me, that's the moral. Like, what do you guys think?
Yeah, I think so. I think you said it pretty well.
Cause like you could say like, oh, the moral is like, don't be a jerk and be Santa Claus or whatever. But that's what I read from it when I watched the end of it. But there's a moment where
I thought it was more about responsibility. I just thought the moral was about taking responsibility for whatever it is that, you know, is required within your life. So that whether that's being a good parent or being the Santa Claus, your job, you know, just take responsibility for it all. So
respecting the Elvish contract, right? That's
yeah.
Stepping up to the plate.
Yeah, a call to action. And you know, his character even kind of like that night where he performs at the performs that night where he gives gifts as Santa, like it is a call to action for his character. He kind of owns up to being Santa Claus. He accepts it, you know. But the thing that's he accepts it so much that even the people that doubted him, like his ex-wife and his you know, the stepdad, they see him as Santa. You know, like they stop seeing Calvin and they see him as Santa. It scares them, you know, but his mother, Charlie's mother takes the custody papers and throws them in the fire. Is that legal? Like if you had any type of contract and you threw it in the fire, it's not binding anymore. Is that how it works? Or
I'm pretty sure that paperwork is filed at the court. Is it not?
It's filed with me. That's a court document. So
yeah. No, so no, that restraining order.
That's not a contract.
Yeah. Actually, though, I will say I think the only thing that makes that if it's a restraining order, or a custody thing, the only thing that really polices that document is the people, like, who made the document, right? Like, so
yeah,
like,
exactly.
Essentially, that mom is it's a gesture of throwing in the fire. I think what she's saying is. Okay, like, yeah, we did this, but I'm not going to report it. Like, you can be with Charlie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's her tool for enforcing it if she wants to enforce it.
So it was more symbolic than it was like a legal action.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as long as she means it, then like he's not going to be liable for breaking the custody arrangement as long as she's not going to take him to court over it.
Yeah. So if she wanted to officially do it, she'd have to go to court and change that. Yeah.
So, well, I mean, she'll eventually have to. I kind of want to go. I wish there's a scene where she went to the court or went to whatever legal advice to or legal arraignment to take care of that. You know, like, so what did she do with the paperwork?
I'm just envisioning every movie getting so much worse by every time that they had something that legal implications. They had like cut scene with like the lawyers going over it and filing it. And, just, you know,
sitting at a conference table with the binders, like, so we see here by page 18 that
yep.
Because imagine being a judge, like, so explain this to me again. Your husband took your son on a sleigh and you burned the custody papers, and then he dropped you a dating game from the 1960s, and then it's like, yes, sir, that's what happened. I think as a judge, you would ask for a drug test, right? Or some type of mental check, right?
I mean, maybe, but do you see how many people saw him at the end? Like, the police officers, everybody? I mean, I don't think he's going to order a drug test for everybody.
So then you'd ask these people to come as witnesses, right? So then there'd be an investigation to the incident. So then, therefore, after this movie, people know that Santa's real. So shouldn't there be some stuff that's like happening where people start like talking about it or start like, you know, investigating this because those are all witnesses? Or did elves go back home and kill these people? Like, well, why is no one talking about Santa in the next movie? You know, it's still a secret. So clearly he exists in the real world, and she would have to prove the how it happened in the court of law so that they could, you know, or like Sean said, just ignore it and just, you know, let it be.
She's just going to ignore it. Yeah, because I think that for the rest of the witnesses, they just whipped out the, you know, the little flash pin thing.
Yeah.
the neuralizer.
The oh no, the EIB, the elves in black. I want to see that movie in Harry Potter, those characters. But yeah, because really, like, let's say she's cool with it now. But like, I mean, who knows if Santa goes off the deep end, you know? And like, if you had to take legal action and get your kid back because Santa's like, you know, he went down south and he's drinking and just turning into bad things, you'd want to get your kid back. So then, therefore, she would eventually have to explain. Look, so here's what happened. My husband, he's Santa Claus. He had my kid. I was cool with it, you know. And then he started taking Charlie to Mexico and doing some bad things, you know. Like
I think all she could do at that point is just like file with the court and get a warrant for his arrest or whatever. But if he's, I don't think the FBI or any state agency, but for that fact, is going to go after somebody in the North Pole, like with no location of knowing where they need to extradite.
Yeah, so you're like she's fucked, you know, like either way, like she's fucked. But yeah, that's the Santa Claus in a nutshell. He becomes Santa Claus, and it's the clause. I don't. So here is my theory to this entire thing.
Okay,
hear me out. It's not a clause. It's a curse. It's the Santa curse because look. From the beginning of the movie, if you notice, those elves have been watching him. Like they were planning, they were planning for him to take over as Santa Claus. And also the other Santa who died, that was murder. It was planned. That was either it was That was strategically planned by the elves.
You think the elves didn't like him and they didn't want him?
Not only that.
Very clearly did not exercise a guardianship over him the way they did over new guy.
And I think it's because the other Santa wasn't a good Santa. Because then when you hear stories about his ex-wife telling, like, I wanted this present and I didn't get it and it crushed me. And then Neil had the same story. He didn't get his weenie whistle, you know?
So you think it was that previous Santa that didn't get
it? I think.
Or maybe they were on the naughty list.
Interesting theory. That could be. But I think it was pre-planned, you know? And that's why nobody like bats an eye that there's new Santa. They just go back to business. Bernard, I think Bernard's the orchestrator of this entire thing. I think he's one that's...
You watch the sequels, right? Do they say anything about any of this stuff in the sequels?
No, I think the sequel, it's the Mrs. Claus, so he has to get married.
Where's the Mrs. Claus from that Santa?
But that's in the second movie, they find it. They look on the fine print. It's funny because they do the same shot from the movie where they get the magnifying glass.
Yeah.
But then they get another magnifying glass in front of that. And then like, oh, there's a clause. A clause? Yeah. So that's a kind of a clever little joke they do.
But I think Chris is asking, where is Mrs. Claus from Dead Santa?
Yeah.
Yeah. Was there Mrs. Claus? If you were to follow the same logic.
Where is she?
That second movie, where is she? Did she die?
Did she get disappeared? Or, you know?
Could you imagine?
Like,
your husband's at work, and all of a sudden
this is an elf conspiracy. Goes all the way to the top.
It's like worse than Thanos. I'm disappeared.
You're waiting for your husband to come back from work, and you're just like, no.
Or they sent her to the island from Lost, which is where they found Juliet, who became the new Mrs. Claus.
There you go.
Wow, you that's it. You went. Yeah. I really want to make some Santa Claus fan fiction. This is a great movie right now.
Everything's connected.
It's all connected.
The Dharma Project.
The Harry Potter elves, same world.
There is no moral to the story. It's whatever you make of it.
And just like directed by J.J. Abrams. Yep. But yeah, like that, like I think that the elves planned it. I think it was all like strategically planned so that Calvin would take over and become Santa Claus. Because look, clearly he has a bad relationship with his kid and his ex-wife and the stepfather, you know? So he's somebody that could be taken away from his family long enough to do the job and not be like too concerning. And then also he has experience in toys. He works for a toy company, but he's kind of an asshole. So I think that's kind of weird, but I guess the Santa Claus, like it makes you a better person. Maybe there's tiny needles that step drugs into you to make you a friendlier person. I don't know, but it changes you. So then I guess it really doesn't matter who puts on the suit as long as they have the proper lifestyle that we can take them out of it to put them in the North Pole. That's my theory. Yeah. That's the way I see the movie. But are there any other legal things like that come to mind about the film that are troubling or can be disputed besides all the stuff we mentioned right now? So I'm trying to think of other things I've seen in the movie that would be a real life problem. But we went through a lot of stuff.
I mean, there's also the problem, even if it's a valid contract, it's still not enforceable because it requires them to do probably illegal things.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Courts are loath to enforce a contract that forces people to do illegal things.
Are contracts, could contracts only be filled by signature or by other means? No.
You can make a verbal contract. You can accept by performance is what he does is called acceptance of a unilateral contract by performance, where if it's clear what the one person wants you to do to manifest your acceptance and you do that thing, you don't have to speak a word. So,
but it's not clear. It's putting on
the suit. If an advertisement says, if you walk into the store and put on this suit, then you get it for, you know, discount or whatever. Like that's, you can just do it by doing, like accept it by performance. You don't have to say anything or sign anything.
So if I go,
but actually good point, Qatar, that you just brought up unknowingly. If the contents of the contract are going to take longer than a year, then it has to be in writing. That's the statute of frauds. So,
okay, there we go. Now we know.
So we, but we don't know for sure because he could like die or whatever. We don't know for sure that it will last longer for than a year. So in this case, that doesn't apply, and we're good. Sorry, I just had to work through that in my head.
No. That is. For somebody that's like some legal porn that they're gonna
love. This could have gone really dark. Like he could have just like, I don't want to be Santa, and then like killed himself like halfway.
Yeah, yo, what if we were Santa and committed suicide? Like what happens? Because another theory, that guy could have just jumped. That guy could have wanted to fall.
Yeah, he's like, screw it. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Whoa.
I don't think there's anything in it that was contingent on him causing the death.
Well,
I don't know if we ever really – we don't really get to a place in the movie where we specifically lay blame on him for killing old Santa. They certainly don't treat him morally for the rest of the movie as though he's a murderer. So,
well, you know, the original – there was original scene where Tim Allen actually shot Santa. Yeah, the original scene, he shoots Santa and he falls.
Are you serious?
Yeah. But Disney was like, you can't do that.
You're being dead serious right now.
Tim Allen admitted it on a talk show where he was like, the original script, I shoot Santa Claus, but Disney thought it was too dark, so we cut it and we shot it.
That's super dark.
Yeah. The movie could have been a lot darker. Star comedy.
Murder.
So Sean, by your explanation of how like contracts work, like when if I were to go into a men's warehouse and I didn't like the way I looked, that like I get my money back or like I could keep the suit? Does that work or
no.
Unfortunately, that's no just, guitar.
That's just ad speak.
Oh, okay, darn it. like my friend told me this is the truth.
That's puffery. You can say a lot of things in advertising that's puffery.
I never liked the way it looked, so damn it. That was fun, guys. So basically we overthought this, but that's what people like us do because we're obsessives. And are there any other things about the Santa Claus you either want to praise or critique before we end this segment we're doing?
Really want to try Judy's hot cocoa recipe.
I do too. I do too, actually. Yeah. Although she says not too hot, not too cold. I'm like, no, I want it hot. I don't want to, you know, like I want it fucking hot. I like my fucking hot cocoa, you know?
But there's too hot, you know? What's the limit? You like it boiling?
I like it like nearly singeing my tongue, you know. I want it hot. Steel. Yeah, because it cools down. I want it hot. I don't want a cold. My drinks are cold really easily. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. I have a cold heart. But yeah, Judy's cocoa recipe. Someone find that. That'd be awesome. Someone design a cookie dispenser. That is like we need that. Somebody, an elf needs to sell that. They're losing money by giving it to Santa. If you're gonna make something, make a fucking cookie dispenser, like please.
I buy it.
Yeah, I'd buy it too. We should talk. If you haven't yet, you know, please fight for elf rights. You know, it's this time of year they're working harder than everyone else. So don't forget, elves' lives matter.
We're all doing this over Zoom. They can't do it over Zoom. They are essential workers.
And on a side note, if anybody is watching this, anybody at all. Please like and subscribe if you have not already.
Thanks. Thank you for the plug.
You're welcome.
So yeah, guys, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. I know you guys are busy. I know Sean was busy working out and quoting law books. And Chris, I know you just got out of bed, so thanks for doing that. Hey, thanks for doing this, guys. You guys look good. Except Chris, you can use a shade, but that's okay. hey, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays. This is a fun video. We're going to do more stuff. So guys, make sure you like and subscribe and follow Sean and Chris on their Instagrams. I have their information down below. If you guys want to, you know, wish people Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, feel free to do it now.
Merry Christmas, guys.
Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy Festivus.
Yeah. Yes. And yeah, Hanukkah, all of them. Don't forget, be safe, be kind, be you. And I'll see you guys on the next video. Peace. We'll be right back.